5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hello.
This is the Foul Mouth Podcast.
Let's go. What's up? Welcome back to the Foul Mouth Podcast. I'm your host. I'm sitting here. My name is Denver. I'm sitting here with Jake. We're here ready to have another good time, ready to film another episode, right?
Yeah, it just so abruptly cut off.
Are you happy with our setup we got going on here? We got lights, cameras, action going on.
We do. We were laughing earlier about like how much like production stuff we're doing now, and like we're actually sitting at the laptop editing stuff now, trying to splice in videos. Yep. I spent a whole day today cussing at my laptop because
realizing
that my college laptop is now completely obsolete. Like, it's just not going to work.
If they could see, we have tape holding the camera on the
you have tape holding your camera.
You have the Walmart special.
Yeah, I do have the Walmart special over there.
But bear with us as we are exploring into running cameras and trying to get it figured out. We're not super adverse in that technological side. You know, we're more of a work on the trucks kind of guys.
We're blue collar.
Yeah. So, we're learning, but you know, that kind of leads us into our first topic. We posted that first reel last week. And it was about basically that the public land hunters want answers on why are we limited to 30 days. So without beating a dead horse, let's jump straight back into that topic because we've had so many people message us. So people are still arguing.
We posted that on Friday.
Yep.
And then I don't remember where exactly. I guess it was Saturday. I was at NWTF, and you texted me because some guy commented on there, and he said, you know, he thought that it brought less pressure for the ducks. And then I replied back to him, and he was like, well, you yourself actually said the podcast. And I was like, dang, got my number.
Yeah, you did.
Know,
you texted me,
and you're like, dude, he got your freaking number. Now, however, I did re-listen to the podcast today, and typically I re-listen, like, I don't know, usually the day
for self-correction.
But yes, you know. I listen so we can get better at it, really. And if you go back and listen to episode one, it is a major difference now. But I actually correct myself in there, like as to what I'm talking about, because he was saying,
are you redoing your stance?
He was saying that I said that oozers are entirely the problem,
right?
And so he was thinking that by saying that I meant that we should limit oozers entirely. But if you go back and listen to what I said, really, I don't care that we're only allowed to hunt 30 days. I would like an explanation behind it. I would like to know what the deal is. Why can we only hunt 30 days? But really, like, I just want to pick my days.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to waste my days on a bunch of 75-degree days that I'm not even getting to go hunt anyways, days where there's no water, days where, you know, it is overcrowded and stuff. Like, I probably would never go open a weekend to a WMA if I could pick my days.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That kind of goes into one of the conversations we've had over the week. We've seen, so in the comments section, it just somehow it drastically turned really quick into public opinion versus private land opinion, and they were definitely butting heads. It was like the vibe that I got was private guys don't care, think we're public guys should just quit fussing about it, essentially. You know, the private guys like, y'all, if y'all got a problem, go hunt somewhere else, move into state. Well, here's the take for my is these guys like us and private guys, we're dealing with two different issues. We're hunting two different tactics.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the question that we're having. I don't even know if we have the answer, but the question is do private land guys, should they be able to cast their vote on public land controversial topics? I guess the question is it really affecting them?
So I really think that there's two schools of thought here. There is duck hunting as a whole that affects everybody, right? There are bird populations that affects public and private land guys. Sometimes bird pressure does affect both public and private land guys, depends on where you're at and stuff. And there's just, season length, that affects mm-hmm. everyone. There are factors that affect everyone, but there's also factors that don't affect guys whatsoever. Now, like the guys that are hunting private land that are guides, like they most likely are getting more business because we're only limited as 30 days yep. As oozers to WMAs. So that may be bringing them more business. You know, that could have been better for them. One of the guys commented on there, which
so
is
you're
how
saying
this,
that they could, since they have 30 days out of the season, they have limited places to go. They may be reaching out to outfitters.
I think that there are guys that said, hey, we're done. You know, I'm not getting out there anymore. I'm not fighting the crowd. And they said, hey, you know what? Let's just book. We're only going hunting 2 weeks out of the year anyways. Let's just book it with an outfitter each time.
Well, I think what you're leading to next is a lot of the hate that was, you know, towards some, from some locals that was, hey, you know, you shouldn't have a problem with it. If you do, go to your own state. You know, comments like that. You know, this is our land. We pay for it in our taxes. Yada, yada, yada. I reached out to – I try not to get involved in the arguments, but I did reach out to one of the
– You mean you don't, like, just
arguing.
Stir the pot in there
yeah,
a little bit?
Yeah, I reached out to one of the outfitters. Like, hey, like, how many of your, you know, customers that are coming in are hunting the 60-day season, you know, where it's not limited on private land? How many of them are out of state versus in-state? And they're to nobody's surprise – it was almost 100%. He said 98%. I would classify that 100% out-of-state guys paying for guided service on private land. What does that have to do with it? I think that the private guys, you know, a lot of out-of-state guys coming in there, and you have these outfitters are profiting off of out-of-state guys coming in there. But when it comes to hunting the public ground, it's almost like it's a different conversation. So not to branch off too far, but at the end of the day, do private just hot take – whether you agree with it, you know, whether you're set in stone on it, but do you think the public guys should have an opinion on private land topics? Like, should they have a guide? You know, if you're a public land guy, should you be able to make rules about what the outfitters can do on their own private land? And same thing that would be the flip side is, should private guys who don't ever hunt public and they, you know, they're running their outfitters, why should they have a say on what's going on some WMA halfway across the state that – it really truly isn't affecting them.
I agree. I think everybody should stay in their own business. Yeah. And they should stay out of other people's. I mean, it's just like, you know, we're not allowed to use mojos. Not that I'm like a huge fan of them or anything, but what if we went, we're not allowed to use any electronic decoys actually yeah. on public land in Arkansas. No wildlife refuges, no WMAs, mm-hmm. you know, not allowed to use it anywhere. What if, you know, we went and told the guides, hey, you know, y'all aren't allowed to use agitators anymore. You're not allowed to use, you know, the Higdon pulsators, you yeah. know, you're not allowed to use mojos anymore.
Yeah.
You know, how do you think that'd make them feel? They'd be like, hey, you're hurting our
take
business.
Take down your designated pooler systems.
You yes.
Take down
yeah,
all that
you're,
kind of
you're
stuff.
Hurting
the jerk
our business
like
is yeah. what they'd say. And I'd be like, that's cool. Well, you know what? We make duck hunting videos. We make content about duck hunting. By you limiting me to 30 days, okay, and thinking that's a good idea, you're hurting my business. Yeah. You know, and I think that's a hard thing for guys to understand is that everybody's in two different boats entirely. But at the same time, like the stuff that they think is affecting them, you know, positively is affecting us mm-hmm. poorly. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have regulations. There should be regulations,
there should be regulations.
Of course.
And here's also the thing to kind of wrap this piece up. We move on to the next segment is everybody's got their own opinion. They're all entitled to it. At the end of the day, like Billy Campbell and Dr. Duck and all them say, it's like, hey, we're on the same team. Like, we're all out here to kill ducks
yeah.
and to have a good time.
Well, we're out here to grow the sport.
Yeah, like, let's grow the sport. Let's get along with each other. Like, yeah, it's fun to talk about heated topics to kind of, like, you know, just have something to, like,
it's
in,
fun.
In a fun way to
hey,
argue
you'll
about.
Get into it on our comment section again, okay?
But yeah,
just
but if,
pop
if,
that engagement
if
right on up there.
If it's making you, you know, pissed off at other people, you know, then you've taken it too far. You need to take
yeah.
a step back.
There were two guys in there that they started kind of going at it, and then they had some comments where I thought that they had resolved it, and then the next one they went at it again.
yeah, so ultimately, like, is guys, you need to get along. Like, you know, we got a lot of great friends that we've met that are private land guys, you know, and I feel like we're both, we're doing two different types of things, two different styles of hunting, but we both have the same mission, and we want to kill more ducks. You know, we want there to be more ducks. I think private land, public land guys would all argue, hey, we would all raise our hand that we want more ducks in Arkansas. We want better hunting seasons. We want a better for the sport. We want good people in it. So I think we're all on the same page, you guys. So everybody just try to get along and be happy about what we're doing. You know?
So speaking of what's good for the sport, what I text you this week and I said, hey, I just want you to know that all of the stuff that people say about politics, they say social media is bad for duck hunting. That's what they
say. Social media has ruined.
Social media has ruined duck hunting. You know, I saw a TikTok the other day and I showed it to Emily and I said, I hate this dude. I'm not going to say who it was, but I only hated him because of his caption, because he said, man, I miss the days when, you know, guys left decoys in the hole and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, he's 18 years old. Like, you weren't even a glimmer in your daddy's eye whenever they were leaving decoys in the hole and stuff. Like, I think that that is wild for guys to say that now. Like, you never actually experienced that. Mm-hmm. Like, we are in the glory days still.
When you look at the numbers, the duck population numbers, like, they're extremely high. The harvest reports are extremely high, which gets me into a topic. I don't know if we still don't have the answer today, is, but how in the world do they do the harvest report? Like, how do they come up with this statistically accurate number that this is how many ducks were killed in Arkansas?
We're gonna find a way to get Austin.
Have you ever told Arkansas or any public official that's keeping record how many ducks Jake has specifically
killed? They asked me how many ducks we killed this season, and it only goes up to like 30. Yeah, and so 30 every plus. Time I'm like 30 plus, because we plus. But like everything else, you know, like geese, like I'm like two, you know, like we killed two Canadas. You know, how many woodcocks did you kill? I don't even know what a woodcock zero. Is.
Yeah, so I'm sure if we were woodcock hunting, we'd shoot the wrong thing. We killed them.
We smashed them.
So we'll do a whole podcast about that. How do they get the harvest report? Because I have no idea how much kind of thing it could be inaccurate.
I'm very confident that we will get some representative from Arkansas Game and Fish on our podcast. Yep. Sometime in the near future, I really would like to do it in person. Mm-hmm. So that's a trip to at least Little Rock for sure. We need you, the viewers, to send us in questions that you want us to ask them. Don't send us your stupid questions, okay? If you send a stupid question, I'm blocking you, okay? Like, you're just blocked. Like, don't waste our time on that. But send us some stuff that y'all want to know from AGFC, like, or legitimate questions that you want us to ask them.
And, because you're friends with the guys. You did a podcast with them already.
Yeah, they're all super nice guys. Yeah,
they're good quality guys, and that's what I was going to, you know, mention earlier.
They're just an easy target.
Yeah, like we love Arkansas Game and Fish. Like, they've given us Arkansas Game and Fish does a great job on getting us access to hunt some of the best land in the country. Some of the best duck hunting places in the world are right in Arkansas, and Arkansas Game and Fish has helped put that together where guys like me and you can travel a couple hours over and go have some of the greatest hunts of all time. Doesn't mean there's not some flaws in the system, you know. It doesn't mean there's not room
nothing's
for correction.
Perfect.
You know, it's not perfect. You know, I think Arkansas Game and Fish gets a bad rap because of the increased popularity of Arkansas, that they've had to make some decisions and make quick rules that maybe didn't get fully thought out, and which has led us into some of the problems that we're having now. So, but not to rant again. So back to pile picks. Pile picks ruining duck hunting. Like,
pile picks are ruining duck hunting. That's what everybody says. They said pile picks are ruining duck hunting. I talked to Matt Houston today, and he told me, we were talking about back in the day before social media existed, when you shot the biggest buck and you went to the processor, what'd you do?
You toted it with you.
Yeah, well, obviously you toted it there. But for 2 hours, you sat around your truck bed and you drank coffee and 100%. You talked to everybody and you had that truck bed wide open. Yep. You said, boys, you look at this 200 inch steer.
We would drive around to people's houses, you know, like drive around, hey, or tell people to, hey, come on over and come see this thing.
So you want to show your stuff
100%,
off, right?
100%.
This week, I had the opportunity to go to a bookstore, local bookstore in Memphis, called Novel, and they had this book there. I was just killing some time, and of course, I went to the sports section, and I was like, oh, we'll see what's over here. You know, I'm a big nonfiction guy, love sports, and I was like, but this is kind of like a liberal area, so I was like, no way they got anything on hunting. And I ended up actually finding it in the local section, though, was it had a, it was a book by L. Wayne Kaputh, is what it is, the author's name, and it was called Historic Waterfowling Images. And it was a really cool book. It breaks everything down from Tennessee to Mississippi to Arkansas, Louisiana, all the way to Nash Buckingham. Nash Buckingham got his own, like, section of the book. And literally all it was pile pictures, people. And it's nothing but pile pictures, dude. They've been taking pile pictures since the 1800s. Since somebody could carry a camera duck hunting, dude, they were stacking their ducks up. And if you watch how they stack their ducks up, they do it just like we do now. They're putting them all up just so you can see every duck. Yeah. We want to make it look. Now, I think, like, as duck hunting became a sport and it was not market hunting, right? Yeah. It has become more and more, you know, that those were trophies, you know, and it's just the same as what we do today. The pictures are trophies to us, you know, like we've got a couple duck mounts each and, you know, getting some done. But like those pictures mean more to me than any duck mount that I'll ever have. You know, both these pictures right here mean more to me than any duck
mount. Yeah, I mean, they're from experiences, you know, we keep them there. So, I mean, it's. I was thinking you only like that book because you need books with big pictures in them, not little few words. Yeah,
I don't. It did actually have a lot of words on it. It had sections on.
Yeah. On you should have bought it. You shouldn't have cheaped out. You should have bought
it. It's $60. I'm gonna go back and get it.
Go back and get it. We could put it on.
They had cool sections. There's a section on Beaver Dam in there. I know both of us are really interested in Beaver Dam. Like I said, section on Nash Buckingham. But like real foot, you know, everything. Like it talked about the White River and stuff and how Nash. Had you know, he presented to Franklin Roosevelt, and he said, "Hey, you know, here's 45,000 acres on the White River. You know, we should turn this into a wildlife refuge and stuff." And that's how all that came to be.
Yeah,
and you know, it's just stuff like that that you just have no idea about. Yeah.
No, that's true, and that kind of goes to a point to what some of the guys are saying is a lot of Arkansas WMAs that aren't federal land were still federally funded. You know, so it wasn't all straight.
Well, it's all funded by the Pittman-Robertson Act.
Right,
and we don't want to go back to that podcast where I ranted about it either.
No, for sure. So pile picks, what you're saying is it's really it's just the marketing of it. It's not, it hadn't changed. Nothing's changed.
You're reaching more. You're reaching more people now than you ever have with your pile picks.
Yep.
But if you're telling me that guys like Nash Buckingham didn't have just one picture with them all the time when people ask them about duck hunting, and be like, "Oh, you ain't never seen nothing like this."
In 1903, he'd have to whip it out of his wallet in a black and white.
And it was about about like a one by one photo. Yeah. Yes, and he goes, "You see all those? Those are all ducks right there." You know, they wrote on the back of it how many they killed, and you scratch that number out and just bump it up.
It's pretty cool. Kind of that kind of old history stuff, and you see these old pictures. I mean, I see guys like Dawson Leake. They're you know taking like you know actual like film photos and stuff where it looks old school. And I see that big trend on Instagram right now, and it's cool. I guess it's nostalgic. It seems like it's got historic value or it's going to be more memorable or something like that. I don't know, but it kind of does make me think like, man, it'd be cool for us to have actual hard copies of our images, just like up at Rolling Thunder, how Rolling Thunder has that bar when you go into their headquarters in Somerville that's got all these laminated pictures from probably the last 30 years, probably.
Yeah.
Something really cool. Don't really know where we'd put all those right now, but I'd love to have something like that down the road.
I've always said I would love to have a whole wall of pictures of all the hunts because I can look, you know, like I've got an ice buck on the wall. Like I said, I've got a, you know, duck mount. You've got some duck mounts and stuff. And I go, oh, you know, like I've got my first mallard mounted and I can tell you the story of it. I mean, you know, I know exactly where we were. In fact, if you go where it is now, there's hundreds of upon thousands of ducks that sit in that field now. And it's hard to think that we ever hunted there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know the story behind it. But when I see a picture, you know, I like the stories just come through more because you're really starting to think about like, oh man, that was the morning that, you know, Denver fell in the water, or Jake fell in the water.
Yep.
You know, we couldn't get the boat started. Like,
sometimes I look at it, I see the one like the trio guys. I'm looking at it, I was like, man, we were tired. We put in a lot of, you know, we didn't sleep at all that night or whatever the story is, you know, and then we got the pictures of blood dripping down our head from where you hit me with the decoy way, you know, things like that. So
you don't get that stuff.
You don't get that from a mount. The pictures are where it's at. So, long story short, everybody who's saying that can kick rocks. It's just not true. You know, I'll say the internet has been. Really great for a lot of things, and it's been really bad for a lot of things. I think ultimately it's just however you use it. So nothing's new under the sun. People have been doing the same thing.
Go pound sand.
Go pound sand. we're here. We're all here. At the end of the day, we want to kill more ducks. So let's move on to the not the less charged topic, but it's going to be the exciting topic.
The meat of the podcast. Yes.
So which I'm assuming is we're going to say. How'd you phrase it? What survived?
What actually survived duck season? So
gear-wise.
Gear-wise.
Yeah.
Or boat-wise, that's fine. We'll count that as gear.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is.
If you guys have followed along with us any amount of time, you definitely know, like, we tear stuff up left and right. Like, we, like, pride ourselves on that. Like,
no, here's the statement. Nobody tears up more stuff than duck hunters. 1,000% public land duck hunters.
If you so if you go to Hunter's Hindsight, which is on our website, foulmouthpodcast.com, you can go to huntershindsight.com. I wrote an article called "It's Only 60 Days," and in there I talk about how my boat motor wouldn't start. And I read it again today, and I laughed about it. I said, I have two batteries. It's only 60 days. How are both the batteries already dead? And both of them, sure enough, were dead.
It's like, not 60 days. It's a lot longer than that. It's only 60 days that we can actually hunt. Yes. So that's why the battery's dead.
Yes. And so
your one piece of gear that it outperformed all other gear you had for the entire season, what would it be?
Hands down, the best piece of gear I had all season was my Delta Weight
jacket.
That's
exactly what I knew you were going to say, exactly what I was going to say. And I had it last year. It's hands down better.
It's insane. It's honestly...
Are we sponsored by Sitka?
No, we're not sponsored by anyone. We're non-sponsored by anybody. So
any opinion you're
getting from us is a true take, 1,000%. If I think that your product is crap, okay, I'll say it. Like, I have no problem with it. Like, but if I think it's great, I'm going to say that it's great. Yeah. You know, like we've talked about swapping brands from Sitka because both of us are big Sitka guys, a big fan of their gear. And
Hold on. You keep saying that about the way you keep thinking of abandoning Sitka.
I'm going to get there.
With the Shin
jacket. I'm going to get there. Yes. Okay. So
I don't think
Shin that. has a Hydro-Lock jacket, mm-hmm. and it's very nice.
Does it have Gore-Tex?
I don't know. I felt it the other day while I was up there. It was very nice. But, I was telling Morgan at Shin, I said, hey, I was like, how is this jacket? What I really asked is, are you going to come out with some more colors?
Because
I like bottom land, but I don't like it that much.
Yeah.
And she didn't really know, or she did, and it's just, you know, sure. They're working on it, whatever. And, she goes, well, just wear your Sitka stuff with it. But that jacket.
So you told her you were comparing it to your Delta Wading jacket.
I told her exactly what I was comparing it to. My Delta Wading jacket, hands down, just the best piece of equipment that I own. And no matter what, it is perfect. Like, we end up with a lot of wet boat rides somehow.
Okay, so your Sitka jacket is the best jacket you've ever had, hands down.
In my entire life.
Your neck gaiter that you have a Sitka, you just freaking love it. You know, you're talking about all the time about how warm your neck is, you know,
it is.
Whatever.
It's so hot.
So when are you going to buy your Sitka waders?
Well, see, that's the thing. Sitka doesn't make a size 14 wader. And Damn. So, sorry, Sitka R&D department, not my problem. Well, it is my problem because I wear a size 14. But no, I've tried on the Shin waders. I went to the Shin warehouse, free advertising for them right here. It was the best experience. Shin gear provides the best experience possible going to their warehouse, getting fitted for waders. It's unmatched. It was insane. I used to work for a custom clothing company and unnamed, you know, and
not free advertising.
Yeah, not free advertising for them for sure. And they, their whole deal was they provided a bespoke experience, mm-hmm. you know, like you're going in, you're buying the best quality, you know, you deserve the best experience possible. When I went up to Shin, I mean, like, I was like, oh, you know, I like these. I like the extra large. Do I need the double XL? You know, do I need the XL tall? Like, which is going to be better?
I heard they give you a glass of whiskey when you're buying.
Well, I wasn't buying, so I don't know. They did have a lot of whiskey up there. And so I was like, oh, I'm kind of on the fence. Like, I don't know which size I mm-hmm. want. And Morgan's like, she goes, oh, we're going to find the size. Yeah. You know, she was like, I don't care if it kills us.
So it was similar to going to like Bass Pro and trying on some waders?
It was absolutely nothing like that, dude. And like at Bass Pro, they just, you go, hey, man, can I try on a size 13? And they just throw the box out the back at you.
Similar to going to Max Prairie Wings?
No, okay, nothing like it, dude. Insane. You walk into Shin, there's couches right there, yeah. There's waterfowl magazines, they've got a full bar back there, it's very well lit. you know, they've got their stuff on the wall. They've got all their patterns right there. And they say, hey, hold on, we'll be back. We're going to go in the back. We're going to find the best fitting waders for you. You try them on. You tell us what you think. Where does it not feel good at? Oh, do you not have enough room in your shoulders? Hey, yeah. We've got extra straps that'll fix that. Let's put one of these straps on there instead.
I'm sold. You got me sold.
It's the best experience. The hands down alone, the shin experience.
How does the price compare to the Sitka waders?
It's $100.
Dang.
$100 difference. Yeah, $100 difference. Now, the Sitka waders are great. Sitka makes a good product. Here's the second thing, though. Sitka, lifetime warranty, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Shin, same exact warranty, but they're in Memphis. Everybody listening, almost all of our listeners, I would say a lot of them, are Arkansas duck hunters, right? You're hours from Memphis, for sure. If you don't drive through there going to Arkansas.
Long way from Sitka.
Sitka,
the fun fact, as a friend of ours works there, their like headquarters of shipping is located in Memphis. So all their products, besides the waders, are being shipped out of Memphis.
Yeah.
Like they're sitting here. No telling where the waders are coming from. But that being said, you're not getting the service. You could drive them to wherever the heck Sitka's waders are.
I mean, you poke
developed.
A hole in Sitka waders, you send them off. It may be months before you see them. You poke a hole in the shin waders, you take them to the warehouse right on Noncana. You go in there and say, hey, like I poked a hole in these. Can y'all fix them? I don't know what their turnaround time is, but I've heard that it's
pretty fast. At least it's there. You can't do that with some of these other brands. But
no.
No, I agree, because I would expect that we will get holes in our waders, because we always do. So to be able to take it somewhere, get it fixed, conveniently.
I'll tell you this. One of the other things about the shin experience that was so great was I was like, man, I was dealing with this guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. This was at NWTF this weekend, because they had taken most of their inventory up there. Mm-hmm. So I had to go make sure that we had the right size. Yeah. And I tried on some double XL waders and XL waders. And I didn't like the XL waders because I didn't feel like I could bend over. But I'm a pretty tall dude. So, kind of different. And I got a little bit around the midsection, if you can't see from the video. and so I try them on. And he goes, hey, man, he goes, the double XLs may feel better than these. He was like, you need to try on the XL tall. XL tall is perfect for me. But he said that this is a great selling point right here. He goes, the double XLs, if you wear them, he goes, they're going to be a little loose on you. He goes, you're going to wear out the seams faster. And he's like, you're walking around in them. He goes, they're going to rub because they're not tied up against you and stuff. And I mean, that alone, like a lot of companies would be like, who cares if you wear out the seams? That means you got to come buy some more waders and stuff. Whereas Shin's like, hey, we don't want you to wear these out. We want you to put them through the paces for sure, but we don't want you to just wear them out where they're unusable. They want you to have lifetime waders.
No, I'm sold. I was thinking I thought you were gonna say it. One of the other problems that we've had when we try on Sitka is we look like a tenderloin being wrapped up tight with some string being put in the
oven. You look like a can of biscuits been sitting on the counter, right?
Yeah, poking through, dude. Sitka fits tight.
I like Sitka's products.
Even their what's the Dakota hoodie or whatever we wear all the time. The sleeves, are tight. You've just been hitting the gym too much. Well, I'm talking about the wrist. I can't get my hands through it sometimes. But the Sitka products, though, to go back, they stood the test of time in the season. We were out in some extremely cold days, record colds,
rainfalls.
Yeah, record rainfalls.
And we were dry.
We were just dry. We've been out in the boat, just trashed, and it performed way better than any other jacket we've ever
obviously
had.
Obviously, unanimous on the Delta Wayne jacket. What is your second outperform the whole season?
I already know. It's my Dive Bomb dry bag. I think it's
pretty good.
We walked in a lot this year, more than we've ever done. Was able to stuff plenty of extra jackets in it, because when we walk in, I'm notoriously get hot, so I go ahead and I just walk in as light as I possibly can, stuff the rest of my jackets in the dry bag, and it's big enough you can store a couple boxes of shells, a couple jackets, several boxes of snacks, camera, and my giant Yeti coffee thermos. And I can't think of my call lanyard and maybe my hat or something like that. All in there, stuffed to the brim. It's one of those trifolds, and then you buckles over, totally waterproof, can fall out of the boat. And it's like $75-$80. Like, it's not expensive at all.
No.
And good color options. So I was totally sold on that. I used it all season. I had the traditional, like, just blind bag. I bought a Rig and Wright bag last year.
Yeah.
And you set it on the ground. It gets damp. The snow melts. The ice melts. Whatever. Whole bag's wet.
You got it wet the first weekend last year.
Here's the thing. Yeah, I did. I was pissed. So the thing is, like, just waterproof stuff. Like, whatever, any option of the gear, you know, waterproof gun case, whatever, you need waterproof stuff because we're doing waterfowl and we're always around stuff that's getting wet. And okay. I'm gonna drop my stuff.
I would say second piece of gear,
yep,
which, you know, gear is a broad term here, that just survived duck season and surpassed my expectations: the stainless steel prop on my boat. If you look at the hard stats, me and you took our boats through the same stuff.
I'm not going to mention my stainless steel.
Took our boats through the same stuff all season long. And how many propellers did you go through? At least three.
I went through, at least three, one of them being your backup. You know, I would have been an advocate the whole time that something's got to give. And the stainless prop didn't give. The prop shaft gave.
I'm an advocate.
I will get a you know, custom prop this year.
The aluminum props are great, I guess. But we just destroy them. And so I ran that stainless steel prop all year. We hit Lord knows how much stuff. And if you feel the edge of it, it is like zero dings.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hit cypress knees. Honestly, I hit rocks a couple times, and we just kind of avoid that topic. and like if you look at your stainless steel prop, which is the same one as mine, it didn't give either. Yeah. The prop shaft gave before the stainless steel prop did.
No, that's true. I mean, the stainless steel prop was really good. I mean, clearly, I think there's something to be said about, and I said this about switching, why my theory is that I tore up more props this year than I did with the Tatsu. It's because I think it's just got more torque, more horsepower. It's spinning the prop faster. The motor's heavier. All these things. So I think, I go back to the Tatsu. I'm going back and forth. Like, the Mercury motor did not hold up. Two seasons in a row did not hold up
for the whole duck season.
So I am not on the Mercury bandwagon. I think they probably make good products, but I've been dealt a lemon, you know, a $10,000 lemon.
Would you consider that to be your worst performing piece of gear for a duck season?
Absolutely, because that and maybe my ammo. My ammo cost me some birds. The motor going down for the second season, that's consistent, you know, consistently bad. The ammo not firing was a consistent problem. So it was the motor not functioning, consistent problem.
I would say worst piece of gear for duck season for me. That's another story. Shout out to the Ford Super Duty.
Yeah.
Now I'd say worst performing piece of gear for the season for me would be, typically I hunt with my Sitka bag, which is a timber bag and it's got its own timber strap. Well, whenever I hunt with my Yeti bag, whenever it's going to rain or we're going to be in the timber, I'd like to take that bag because I don't want my camera to get wet. I want all my electronics to stay dry. And the Yeti Penga is just superb. But my freaking Drake tree strap, dude, I have used it, you know, maybe a handful of times over the years, and I was hanging, literally I just had a bag of shells hanging on it and stuff, and the whole bag fell into the water, and I had 30 shotgun shells in there, ruined. I mean, literally just ruined, and the hook just broke, and I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, that I could not have, because I had to stick my arm in the water to try and find them, and we were leaving. I was so mad, dude. I was like, this is freaking ridiculous. Like, that's unacceptable.
Somehow I made it through the whole duck season, now looking back, without a tree strap. So I guess I just threw my bag. If you weren't standing beside me, I just threw my bag up at the tree.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we share my tree strap
a lot. Just let it float, you know, so...
What's your new aside from Shin? We're both pretty sold on Shin.
Yeah.
What's your new piece of gear for 2023 that you want to get or looking forward to getting?
I'm getting the hydro turf on the boat. I'm excited about that stuff, but that's not really going to change too much. Just looks. We're getting the waders like you mentioned. I got the new shotgun that I really didn't get to use much this season, maybe two hunts. So I'm looking forward to that. But probably the biggest thing is going to be our transition of where we go with ammo. I mean, I think everything else, we kind of have everything we need. I mean, we got the Heyday decoys. We'll get more of the Heyday decoys. They're invincible.
Solid piece of gear. Definitely solid number four.
But I want to, like, get a couple boxes of different types of ammo and put them through my own rigorous test. You know, drop them in the water.
We're going to leave them sitting in water for 30 minutes and see what happens.
For a little bit. You know, see what, you know, let them get a little rusty. You know, just give them through a test. Maybe, and we've never powder nerd guns, ever. We've never shot skeet with duck loads, which I don't know who would, you know. But like,
it costs way too much
out,
money.
We've never like gone out and been like, "Hey, let's pattern our gun. Let's see, you know, what it's hitting." I think we should do that this year. And like, you know, not that we're like missing a lot. I'd say we're
the
we're
only skeet
shots.
That we went and shot this year. We were just like shooting trick shots the whole time.
Yeah, it was, you know. But so I've kind of, I'm not to say that I have everything, but we've spent the last couple of years really trying to narrow down exactly the right gear that we feel like we need. And we've collected a lot of stuff, and really we're trying to kind of get rid of the stuff we don't use and run a tight ship.
So that's the thing. At NWTF this weekend, they gave us a $25 Bass Pro gift card for going.
Wait, sorry. Hold on, not to interrupt you. The one thing that I am excited about getting this year is I'm getting one single cut down call.
Dang it, you took mine. I was gonna say that.
One single, and we kind of we think we've also made a unanimous decision that we're gonna run one call. It's gonna be the Rolling Thunder, probably the Brute. Don't know if the Brute XL, the Brute XL is a little bit.
Yeah, it's either gonna be the Brute R, the Brute, or the Brute XL.
But we're gonna fly the flagship. We're gonna be one duck call kind of guys. Rolling Thunder all the way.
Might as well be. Calls. So one of the things that we struggle with is we're constantly swapping back and forth between our J frames and our cut downs, and it's
terrible.
It's not a good strategy, you know. And they have a new J frame out, but I want to blow a cut down. I want to be loud, you know. And
because we've said if we're somewhere where we don't need the cut down call, we're not hunting where we want to be.
That's so true.
Do we need a J frame call? Yeah, but we're not. You know,
I don't want to go hunt a rice field. I'm hunting,
like,
the timber.
If I need a J frame, that's just, you know, I'll let somebody. You probably don't need to blow a duck call. They're just gonna, you know, you sit.
So you're saying anyone that blows a J frame is not a true duck hunter? Is that what you just said? I think that's what you just said.
I'm saying there's two different. Let me say this. I was at Avery, and one of the guys in there sold me on this silly J frame call that I have. I mean, it's a good call, but his selling point was he was a guide at some rice field somewhere, and they shot X amount of thousands of birds this year, whatever. And I was like, that's cool, man. It's like, how close was the guys next to you that you were competing? There were no guys next to you that you're competing on call with.
Miles away.
Yeah, miles away. They're coming to, you know, probably a managed food plot, perfect water level, perfect everything all the time. I was like, that's not a big selling point for me. Now, I did buy the call, but it wasn't because of its selling points of the guiding guys can kill them.
I think that is a disconnect. I think a lot of private land hunters don't understand. I think they hear guys like us calling. You know, they go to a Max, they go to a Rolling Thunder. Probably not Rolling Thunder. I feel like most of the guys buying Rolling Thunder calls are public land guys. But I feel
serious duck hunters
are buying Rolling Thunder calls. But I feel like the disconnect between the public and the private guys as far as calling goes is a lot of the private guys don't understand, like, why we call so loud. They're like, gosh, dude, man, those guys just blow duck calls so loud. And it's because we're not competing with the ducks. You know, the ducks aren't the competition. The competition are the guys that are 300 yards from us.
It's both. You know, it takes like what you said, the guys have said out there that, hey, calling really matters out here. You can come back to the same spot, and you could sit there all day, all year, and you'll get lucky a few days. They'll just want to be there. But for the most part, you have to convince them to come into the timber.
Yeah, absolutely.
As weird as it is, like, they're using the timber when we're not there convincing them. But at the same time, they're not just piling in. You know, if you were to go over any WMA in Arkansas when it's not open, there's not just going to be 500 ducks in every hole. Like, this is not the case. There's going to be a couple holes with a bunch of ducks, and there's going to be a lot of holes with not many ducks.
Yeah.
And so what you have to do is be in a hole and maybe get lucky that they actually just want to just dive bomb straight in that hole.
Absolutely.
But there's a gazillion holes. Like, the odds are not that high.
Well, and
so
we've
you
seen,
have to convince
we,
them
we've
to come
seen
into
that
your hole.
The ducks don't even always land in a hole. Sometimes they see the tiniest opening in a tree, no bigger than a freaking doorway.
Yeah.
And they're just coming to ride down in there and landing. Like, so many times this year did we scout, and we both saw ducks, and we go, how did those ducks get right there? Like, where did they come in and land? And, like, did they swim 600 yards?
Like, when we see them right off the edge
of
a road and there's just tight timber. Yeah, it's like, what are they doing here?
Yeah, like, what are they doing in there? Obviously, they're getting away from us because they're they're smarter than us. And but you know, it's just interesting to learn and see
they haven't experienced you know, the calling that it takes in the woods compared to when you're in a, you know, you're in a field or something like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, like those guys, they're good callers too. It's just a different.
I mean, there's a ton of great guys that are perfect at calling, like Rusty Creasy, excellent duck caller, hunting private land. I mean, he's hunted public before too. I'm sure
that's where he got his roots.
Yeah, I mean, he knows the difference that we're talking about. But like your average everyday Joe Blow hunting a rice field is going to be like, why the heck those guys call so loud?
I feel like you go there, you're going to more likely overcall than you are undercall. You know, you're going to be too loud. You know, it's just different. You know, it's a totally different experience. Yep. You know, not that one's better than the other, but it's just that I do see that perception that they're like, man, calling really didn't matter that much. I'm like, well, it may not out here, but in the woods, it matters.
Yeah. Well, the ducks don't just look at a hole and go, oh, yeah, hey, that hole's nice. Maybe we should go land down there. You know, they hear the ducks chattering down there. Like the whole goal of when we go duck hunting is I'm trying to fool that mallard into thinking that there are other mallards down here.
And nothing better than at least believing that, hey, I convinced those birds.
Yeah, feet down in the water. Those ducks thought that we were real ducks.
You see it. Like, you see it sometimes when we're tucked away off our decoys a little bit, that they're really wanting to land where we're calling, not where the mallards, you know, not where the decoys are, not where the hole is. Like, they're looking at the noise you make. You kick the water, like they're actually looking at that. Like they're like, whoa, what, you know, it's what's going on? You know, it's like to see the responses. I mean, it gets me pumped up. We could sit here and talk about it all day, but we're trying to wrap it up. But we're again going over time as always.
Just a little bit.
But we didn't even get into scouting. So I guess
we'll do that on another episode.
We'll do that on another episode. But
so as always, guys, thanks for joining us. I mean, we got nothing.
Yeah, guys, just
duck season's gone. Duck season's over, man.
Share it to your buddies. You know, leave a 5-star review if you can. All that stuff helps out.
Yes, if y'all could leave us a 5-star review, Spotify and Apple, that'd be perfect. Yep. Helps the algorithm, helps us get noticed a little bit more. Yep. Free advertising, obviously, if you make good products. So
yeah, we'd like to use them. So
yeah, if you want to send us a free product, we'll definitely talk about it for sure. But just know, if it's crap, we're going to say it's crap. So
just speak the truth. Until next time, guys. We'll see you later.
Yep. Catch you boys at the ramp.